On hubris and humility, I mean, I guess I was using technology in a somewhat loose sense, referring to analytic technologies rather than particular products of technoscience. And I think it's an interesting idea that you say that the sciences, I mean, of that divide between science and technology, the sciences have the humility and the technologies have the hubris. So one point that I think STS scholars tend to lose sight of is that for all that we go around the world saying that technoscience has to be taken as a single product, if you talk to people in the scientific world in an ethnographic way, they recognize the difference between science and technology in some sense all the time, and they're very unwilling to accept and unhappy to accept the term technoscience. So I think we have to keep that ethnographic corrective in mind, in a sense. So I think you're right that people who work in curiosity-driven research and in the sciences in general operate with much more of a sense of the provisionality of what they're doing, whereas people who are making objects that work are, you know, obsessed with the making the thing work. And so it's not even clear to me what the intellectual category is for provisionality in an engineering field. I mean, if the thing doesn't work, then you are a failure and you will be fired, you know. So the British Airport Authority's chief communications officer or somebody like that was fired when Heathrow Terminal 5 opened in a way that any STS scholar would have predicted. A mega technology bound to have glitches. The hubris was in imagining that it would come into being on day one in Britain of all places and the luggage would flow freely. I mean, you know, when for the past 6 months Heathrow Terminal 4 was not having the luggage flow freely. Okay, so, I mean, you know, there is that sort of problem to get, I mean, that technology producers don't seem to have a place in their mind, an analytic space where they can think of the provisionality. And maybe one place for STS to contribute to that is that the provisionality comes in some way from the complexity of the links between the material and artifactual and the social dimensions and the complexities that lie in that sort of area. But I think that the word technoscience increasingly is striking me as sort of difficult if you want to communicate across boundaries. On your very interesting points, I have a son who is a biophysicist, and he got his undergraduate degree in biochemistry, so neither from biology nor from physics. He held a position at MIT in nuclear engineering and in brain and cognitive science, but now has transferred his main appointment to a new department at MIT called biological engineering. So you're talking about a domain that I know extremely well because of ties of blood and watching him maneuver in this space. I think the language problem can be confronted in a variety of different ways, because in, you know, for instance, when the neuroscientists have their annual conference, you know, 35,000 people show up, but why do they all operate under this umbrella? You know, partly it buys them a certain kind of resources, partly they can cross boundaries in interesting ways, and people find sort of recognition enclaves inside those territories where they meet up with other neuroscientists who are doing their kind of thing. So the whole thing works in a kind of specialized village with multiple functions, that sort of way. And so you don't need full comprehension between any two members of the community. You just need a sufficient sort of enveloping discourse that keeps things going and allows for the possibility. You know, we know that science advances in interesting ways when somebody has a germinating problem and somebody else from a completely different setting has the reverse germinating problem, and they happen to meet at the cocktail party at a big scientific conference and fall to talking, and, you know, so something happens. So I'm not sure that full linguistic competence between fields is a necessary, I mean, something more networked, you know, a bit of communication here and a bit of communication there may be enough. That's the kind of stuff that people in the sort of micro lab studies side of STS often study what keeps a new nanocenter, you know, functioning, where, you know, it's nobody agrees that there's a single thing called nanotechnology, and yet we're spending like $10 million to fund a new nanotech center. What exactly is it doing, and how does it generate productivity? The point about negative and positive things, and I mean, I was actually just trying to produce a list for provocative purposes to make the point that the one thing that holds these things together is that they all came into being without anybody saying, should we have them or should we not? Not in a public space. In fact, the very first genetically modified product that was broadly speaking in agriculture or food in America was Monsanto's recombinant bovine growth hormone. And I did some interviews at Monsanto at the time and asked them, you know, why did you go for this product? And they gave what I have since called the Mount Everest answer, because we were able to do it. So, you know, it was driven by the sort of internal logic of a production trajectory and not by any external economic or other trajectories. But then once they had the product, they tried to bend the economic world to make it fit by shutting out the people who wanted the labels and by doing various other things. So I'm by no means meaning to say that all these technologies are equally good, bad, or indifferent. They have different potentials. And, you know, it's just a question to me of who should be involved in the imagining, where I'm pretty sure that it's an overly narrow field that's currently doing the imagining. And so, sometime I'll tell you, maybe tomorrow I'll talk a little bit about the human-animal chimera to illustrate this particular point. The one thing that I thought of when you were talking about the difficulties of explanation and the difficulties of translation is the idea that is captured in the American saying, the perfect should not be the enemy of the good. And, you know, maybe some raggedness in the margins is not such a bad thing. After all, in something like a productive and good marriage, it's never complete understanding that you get. I mean, just a willingness to work things out. And indeed, many long-time spouses, as I can testify, swear that the other spouse has developed selective deafness in the vocal register of the partner. So the willingness to work things out itself takes certain kinds of forms that, you know, is it willingness to let you do your thing while I do mine? Is it willingness to become complete collaborators and co-authors of a single piece of work? I mean, there are multiple ways of mixing and mingling in these kinds of communities. And I think the sciences are a model for other parts of society where I don't think the same collaborative ideas have been taken for granted at all. So collaboration in humanities and social sciences is on the whole less creative than it is in the sciences. Now, I think in the sciences it works to some extent because the incentive structures are so large. I mean, that if the governmental authority says, give me, come together with a center that is truly interdisciplinary and I'll give you £10 million over the next 10 years, that's considered a pretty high incentive. Nobody has ever said that to an STS center. So, you know, I think one of the sort of footnote observations that I would make is that if your idea that it's a game with multiple actors is right, and I think it is, then we're selectively putting a lot more resources into encouraging pieces of the collaborative game than other pieces of the collaborative game. And so this goes back to the whole democratization point, that we're not systematically thinking how to empower all of the people who hold, in a sense, entry card rights into the game to participate in, you know, fair and equal ways. When the Nanotechnology Act in the States or the initiative was passed, NSF decided to fund 9 technology centers and 1 social center. And then when they actually provided the funding, they cut the social center funding in two and produced two half centers. So, you know, I think that says something about the condition of the world. Thanks.